From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it, and we are glad today to welcome in Monsignor James Murphy. Father, good day to you.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you. It's been a while since I've talked to you.
It has been a while.
And all your
stuff. It's been a while, and it's with COVID, we haven't gotten to see anybody.
I know. It's about time to get it over with.
So, are you saying masses in front of full churches now?
I am, yes. I help at All Hallows and also a bit in Back to Conception. But I also do a number of funerals over at St. Mary's Cemetery.
Right.
They end up being funerals for families that are not practicing anymore and don't have any contact with parishes or priests, and so I fill in. So it ends up being a kind of an outreach to those who are on the edge or have left the church for a while.
People who need us.
Yes, and you see a death. A funeral context is a time when people are open to the more fundamental questions of life. So I enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I'm looking at the Catholic Herald here. I don't know why it's on the back page. I guess they save the best for last.
Well, that's where they stick me.
But, oh my goodness, I have had this fascination with Dorothy Day for a long time. And
yes.
I remember, a number of years ago, writing a newspaper column. I still write a newspaper column, but this was a particular column about who are the ten people in history who you would most want to have dinner with, and I included Dorothy Day, and I just listed their names. I didn't list who they were or what they were or anything. I just listed Dorothy Day, and my editor sent me a note. And say, because some of them were more famous, like, Willie Mays or Mickey Mantle or somebody, and Joe Namath. And I said, she said, don't you want to let the readers know who Dorothy Day is? And I said, oh, no, I think that's a good little mystery for them to look up.
Exactly.
And
the source of my interest in her is I met her twice.
Did you really?
Yes. The first time was at the Newman Center in Sacramento. Back in 1971, when she spoke to the students at the Newman Center.
How did I miss that?
Yes, and what I remember about that night is not her main talk, which is about her conversion to Catholicism, which I knew already. What I remember vividly was the answer she gave to a question from a student afterwards.
Hmm.
And this student got up and said, now, Miss Day, I get it about the soup kitchens, and this is admirable work, all the people you feed, but what are you doing to address the roots of poverty? The roots of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And she's paused for a good 5 seconds, looking straight at him and said, nothing.
Wow.
And he said, well, what's the point of it all then? And she said, the folly of the cross.
Wow.
I almost fell off the chair.
Wow.
And I'm sure that student wasn't very, was a bit baffled by it. But, I found out only later, that this is a question she'd been getting for years from all kinds of Ivy League students on the East Coast. And her response was always the same. We are not social workers. We are not people out there to reform society. She said, and if that makes us sound impractical, we're here to do the spiritual and corporate works of mercy. And if that makes us impractical, then so be it. She said, we are impractical as Calvary. She said, we are fools for Christ.
Wow.
This is the folly of the cross. So that, in my mind, of course, marked her off right away from your garden variety social activist and social reformer.
Yeah.
Profound. I thought it was precisely profound.
Wow.
My second time to meet her, by the way, and then at the end, just on the side here, at the end, of course, I was working for the Catholic Herald at the time. And I was asked to do an interview with her for the paper. So afterwards, I asked her for an interview. And she was really brusque and said, no, you heard my talk. Isn't that enough for you? And she looks me up and down. And I'm dressed in black. And she said, are you a priest? I said, yes. Why are you doing that job? That's a job for lay people.
Oh, wow.
She said to me. So, I wasn't in the least offended. I was awed by her. So, then the following year, she was down in Delano.
Mm-hmm.
She joined Cesar Chavez in a picket in Delano. In fact, she was arrested at that time. That was her eighth and last arrest, her eighth and last time to be arrested for doing social activism. That day, I didn't go up and talk to her because I didn't want to get bawled out a second time in the Catholic world. So, but what I do remember about it is, she. I read about it since. She got into a good discussion that day on that they were picketing a big farm down there near Delano.
Mm-hmm.
And she got into a discussion with one of the sheriff's deputies, who was obviously Catholic, Mexican-American, right, and was fascinated by her. And she was talking to him about Tolstoy, the Russian novelist, right, and an article that Tolstoy wrote, "How much land do you really need to survive?"
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the context was obvious of this huge farm. And the guy was fascinated. And she finally, look, she says, "I'm coming back tomorrow to pick it again. And tomorrow," she says, "I'll bring back my Bible. And I will read the Sermon on the Mount to you and everybody else who wants to hear it." So the following day she comes back. And before she gets a chance to open the Bible, she gets arrested, along with 30 nuns.
Oh, wow.
There was a chapter meeting in San Francisco of the Sisters of the Holy Child Jesus, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there at their chapter. 30 of them spontaneously decided to jump on a bus, go down to Delano, and join Cesar Chavez in his demonstration.
Wow.
And of course, they ended up being there with Dorothy as well. So they were arrested with her and a number of other people. But Dorothy said about that time in jail, she said, "It was like a retreat." She said, "It was like a retreat. We had 30 nuns there. They were praying the liturgy of the hours, and they were singing hymns." And she says, "People were coming up to me, all kinds of people, with their Bibles and their rosaries for me to bless them, including prison guards."
My goodness.
Yeah, at that point, obviously, she was a living saint for everybody, including the police.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That is remarkable. You know, and she had to be, she died in 1980 at age 83,
yes,
so she had to be mid-70s then, early to mid-70s?
She was mid-70s by then, and actually what I found out was that towards the end of her life, she would get tired on the road. She would just get tired and irritable. That's why she was so irritable with me. And probably she was so short with the student. She didn't really elaborate or help the student to understand, but she was like that at the end of her life. And it was tiresome for her on the road and in buses and trains and giving these talks.
Wow. But to go down to Delano and obviously in the summer.
Cesar Chavez.
Yeah, that's...
Right.
I went down...
Yeah. I was with Father Keith Kenny, who was the pastor of Guadalupe at the time. He invited me down. Of course, Keith was a personal friend of Cesar Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
So I met Chavez that day as well. So that was quite a day for me.
Wow. Cesar Chavez, I just have always admired him, of course, growing up in the Sacramento Valley, and
It's part of our California history, and you know, it's one time looking back over the history of the church. It's one time when the official church was on the right side of history, and the bishops, the American bishops, were behind him all the way. They stood up to big farming interests and stood by the workers, and they were the reason that he was successful. So I thought for once, the church is on the right side.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember, a few years ago, the Davis Public Schools had, they invited, you know, various people like the mayor, the police chief, and a newspaper columnist to come read to the fifth graders.
Right.
And so I got asked to do that, and I showed up at this public school to a fifth grade class. And they said, "Did you bring a book to read, Mr. Dunning?" And I said, "Well, no, I didn't." And she said, "Well, why don't you just pick one off the shelf here, you know, in the little library here." And the kids are all sitting there cross-legged on the floor, you know, and they're all being attentive. And I see a book, and the title is "The Life and Times of Cesar Chavez."
Oh, interesting.
Pull the book out, and I open it up, and the first page, and I start reading, and it says, "Cesar Chavez was a daily communicant." I'm in a public school.
Interesting.
The blood flowed out of the teacher's face.
And speaking of which, of course, Dorothy Day was extremely devoted to the Eucharist.
Right.
It was said about her that the three things that kept her going were her personal prayer, daily Mass, and the spiritual and corporate works of mercy.
Wow.
And all of them combined came to over 3 hours a day. I mean, you'd wonder where she found the time to do all the social activism. She was constantly on picket lines and getting involved in all this stuff. Where she found the time for all of it, considering her prayer life. But obviously, wow, it flowed from her prayer life.
And you wrote that, and this is in the current Catholic Herald, and it's the first of a three-part series. I can't
Correct.
Wait for the other two parts. The breviary. Tell us about the breviary.
The breviary is that's the seven-step prayer that all priests and nuns, all the way up to the Pope, say every day, plus an increasing number of lay people. It starts with Matins in the morning. It's what's done in community by the Trappist monks.
Mm-hmm.
They start at 3:30 a.m.
Right.
And go all the way through 24 hours. But we do it privately. That's what she does. She loved the Psalms. She absolutely loved Psalms. And that's the hangover from her Protestant background. She grew up Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't take them directly from the Bible. She was doing the Liturgy of the Hours, and that's, of course, it consists of a lot of Psalms, mm-hmm, all the way through it. But she also had a special affection for the Trappists, because a couple of her volunteers in the Catholic worker movement joined the monastery and became Trappist monks, one in particular, mm-hmm, down near, went to a monastery down near Atlanta. And so she would go to visit them, and she would stay a day or two, and she would join them. And then starting at 3:30 a.m. or 3 o'clock a.m., she would join the community for the Liturgy of the Hours. And afterwards, when she would go home, she was very conscious of the fact, during the Liturgy of the Hours, she was very conscious of the fact that the monks and these monasteries have done these, or they've already done matins at 3 a.m., I'm only doing it at 6 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But she went through pretty much the seven steps, I think. Yeah. That alone was a huge commitment of prayer.
Wow. And you know, it's interesting what you say about the folly of the cross. You know, if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, if you look at Matthew 25, it doesn't say, I want you to, Jesus isn't saying, I want you to get at the root causes of people being hungry
right,
and
right.
naked. And
exactly.
He
yes,
just says,
exactly.
take care of them.
You're not a social engineer. Right.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
You know, the one thing that, to me, you know, people, when they talk about, well, Jesus, he wasn't really the Savior. He was just this or that. I say, you know, if you read Matthew 45, there's some obvious stuff, you know, the hunger and naked. And that's pretty
right.
obvious. You
correct.
Should do that. He says, visit
correct,
people
correct.
In prison. And I'm going,
yes.
wow. You know, who'd yes. I wouldn't have thought that wouldn't have been in my top four or five.
Wouldn't even think
you know?
About it. Yeah, right. And, she loved to say to people, too, that Jesus was the world's greatest failure.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest example of failure was the cross, was Calvary. You know?
Right.
And she was totally, you know, based in that. And that's where she was a huge fan of Dostoevsky, of course, and also of Tolstoy, mm-hmm. those Russian authors. And Dostoevsky, you know, said at one point, and I think it's in the Brothers Karamazov, he said, you know, fear, he said, don't fear the social reformer who's out there to change everything, but fear the mystic, who's also a social reformer.
Uh-huh.
They're the one to be worried about.
Wow. So what do we know about her childhood? Born in 1897, in Brooklyn?
Yes. Of course, her dad was a journalist, and mm-hmm. They moved around quite a bit because he was getting different jobs, and she was in San Francisco at the time of the earthquake. She was very young. She was there and remembers the earthquake and remembers how people, you know, took care of each other. They, mm-hmm. they were really in Oakland. They really took care of each other. You know, the common humanity bond was very obvious among people after that terrifying experience of the earthquake. Then they moved to Chicago from there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they were basically non-practicing, Episcopalians. But she did sing in a choir, go with some of her friends to church. And then I think she ended up being confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, she left, and she became a communist. And all of her friends were all communists, all mm-hmm. of her friends. And she was involved, I mean, she was involved with a bunch of very, very radical writers in Greenwich Village.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to gather regularly, and they would gather in a pub, in a tavern there in Greenwich Village called the Golden Swan.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a back room, and they would go into the back room because the women couldn't weren't allowed to drink at the bar.
Right.
They go in the back room there, and they would drink half the night away. And she was admired by all the tough guys because she could drink them out of the table in those days. This is before she became a Catholic. And her granddaughter, nothing fazed her. Her granddaughter tells the story that one night she was going home in a taxi to her apartment. And this guy in the taxi goes off the route and drives into a cemetery in Yonkers and goes about assaulting her.
Oh,
and she fought back. She was taken out of it. She fought back like a Shakespearean shrew, and she bit him until he bled. And he backed off, and she ordered him, "Now you drive me to the rail station, the train station."
Mm-hmm.
And incredibly, he did. And along the way, he's swearing at her. He's cursing like, he'd been bitten by her and everything.
Right.
He's swearing, and she shuts him up, and she scolds him and lectures him about the way he's living his life.
Wow.
That's the kind of guy she was. She was a tough, tough cookie. But then that same person, I make this point in the second column, that same person, when she became a Catholic, was a very different person when she herself was scolded in confession. In confession, mind you. She was an example of humility and compunction. And the sin that bothered her most, she lived a very, very promiscuous life. She had several affairs with guys, and they were much more about lust than they were about love.
Mm-hmm.
In those early days, she was working out her spirituality in the wrong way. And then she had an abortion, and she attempted suicide twice. This is all before she became a Catholic. So you would think they were the big sins in her life, right? But later in life, going to confession, every week, by the way, every week she went to confession. What bothered her were not that. What bothered her was the sin of pride, believe it or not, the sin of pride. A very blunt nun one day was visiting her house of hospitality just to see what she was doing. And this blunt nun said to her face, she said, "Dorothy," she said, "feeding the poor is dangerous work because you begin to think you're God's gift to humanity." Dorothy was taken aback by the comment, but she said afterwards, she said, "I never forgot it." She says, "Until my dying day, I'll remember that." She says, pride is lurking in every corner. She says, "I have to ask myself the question, am I getting a swelled head when they tell me I'm going to be a saint, or they tell me that the Pope admires me? Am I feeding all these young people, or these poor people, just to make myself feel good?" She said,
wow.
Pride is lurking in every corner.
That's profound, and it's really true. It's easy to get, "I'm better than everybody because I take a day off and feed the hungry," or
right. And I mean, it's true that people do these things for a need. They have a need to do it.
Right.
That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I mean, do it anyway. But there's always a mixture of motives. Yeah. But yeah, she was saintly. Clearly.
So did she have a family?
She had one daughter. She finally settled down with this guy, Forrester Battenham. They had a common law marriage in Staten Island. She was very successful as a writer. In fact, from her, she got the money she made. She was able to buy a little cottage on Staten Island on the beach there.
Mm-hmm.
And she lived with him for a couple of years. She had one daughter, Tamar, from him. But he was totally anti-religion. Totally. As were all her friends, by the way. All of her friends were that way. And then she had to leave him eventually when she became a Catholic. How the interesting Catholicism started was, she was one night drinking in the Golden Swan with all the others. One of her friends was O'Neill, Jean O'Neill, the playwright,
mm-hmm.
who later got a Pulitzer Prize. And he was there regularly. And this one night, they were drinking all night. They were all night there in the back room drinking. And so she walked him home. As usual, she was able to walk after that. He wasn't, because she could drink anybody under the table. So she walked him home, and then she is walking home herself to her own apartment, all mm-hmm. within walking distance. And she's passing by St. Joseph's Church on 6th Avenue. It's 6 a.m., and people are going into morning mass.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, from pure curiosity, she goes in and she sits in the back of the church. And you can imagine the state she's in. She's been drinking all night, has had no sleep, but she was still pretty sober. And she's sitting there and she's watching it. and she's watching, what is it about these people? What is it that brings them here at this hour of the morning? And then afterwards, she saw them going over to the side to statues, and they would light a candle, and they would pray to the statue. And she says, I felt so resentful. She said, they had their saints, and I had nothing. So she began to go fairly regularly. Then she would pop into the back of the church there every morning, and she says she would, the best she could do was say, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. That's how it started.
Well, and what age was that again?
Oh, she would have been in her 20s.
20s, probably, yeah.
In her 20s, no.
During the Roaring 20s.
Right.
Yeah.
This would be the Depression. But the Depression was coming up.
Yeah, right.
It was coming up because she did her house of hospitality during the Depression. But she kept her communist friends all the way through. There are two autobiographies of Dorothy Day. There's The Long Loneliness, which is the one that's best known. And in that one, she describes this whole thing with Jean O'Neill. But there's also an earlier one she did, From Union Square to Rome. Mm. And that one is only on her spirituality and her conversion. It's much more narrowly focused. And it's addressed to her communist friends. Her communist friends couldn't imagine what happened to her. What happened to you? You mean you're in that retrograde organization, the Roman Catholic Church? Do you really believe all the stuff they tell you? You really believe that piece of the wafer is the body of Jesus? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? She says, yes, I do. And she wrote that book, directed to them, and the way she defends the Eucharist there without putting a tooth in it is just amazing.
I have to
read
that.
But she kept her communist friends until the very end. And one in particular, Regina Prune. She was a fellow communist with her from her student days in college. They got to know each other. They were roommates. And they stayed friends. Dorothy moved on, became disillusioned with the communist vision, the communist promise, became a Catholic. Regina did not. And Regina went to Moscow and joined the Bolshevik Revolution in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And she was involved as a Bolshevik in Moscow. She died young. I've forgotten exactly what happened, but she died in some kind of an action there in Moscow. And she's buried in Moscow. Her urn is in one of those mausoleums for revolution is in Moscow. But Dorothy speaks of her with such kindness and such love. You can tell she adored Regina. And she would say that Regina was an anonymous Christian. Her selfishness, her dedication, her love for the poor, she says, that's Christianity, except it's anonymous. She says she belongs to the invisible church. That's why she kept these friends, several of them. Mike Gold is another one. Mike Gold is a notorious radical, a Marxist until the very end of his life, wrote in Marxist publications. He was a close friend until the very end. And, of course, Forrester, who she was living with for 2 years or 3 years, they stayed in contact. Even though he hated organized religion, he could not stand any kind of religion, of any kind, not just Catholic. And he went to her funeral in St. Patrick's in New York.
Wow.
But the idea of him walking into a Catholic church for a funeral is amusing. But he went.
So was she, her attraction to communism, was it because of the communal nature of it in a perfect way, not the political system itself?
It would be the promise of justice for the poor.
Uh-huh.
You know, workers of the world, unite. The only thing you have to lose are your chains. She was attracted by that. She says, middle-class Christians, comfortable middle-class Christians who care less about the poor, drove me into communism. And then she says, communism, in turn, drove me to really find God.
Wow.
She would say at the same time, I was tortured all my life by God, as was Dostoevsky. Dostoevsky said that. I was tortured by God. She says, I was too.
Boy, she did not just convert and become a garden variety Catholic, did she?
No, absolutely not. No, and actually, I find Union Square to Rome, the first autobiography, very interesting. In that book, she says flat out that, look, for me, she said, it's either the Catholic Church or despair. There's no middle ground.
Mm.
And she describes, for example, when she was arrested for the first time, her first arrest was she was picketing outside the White House for women's suffrage. And she was with a whole bunch of other people. She ended up in jail. It was her first time to see the inside of a jail. And it absolutely overwhelmed her. It was traumatic, the sheer misery of the place and of the people who were there. And she felt this incredible sense of futility, the utter futility of life. And she said, even if the communist vision were achieved, there's still man's heart. Unless man's heart is changed and transformed, what good is it all? Mm-hmm. See, the promise of a utopia in this world, she realized, was too empty.
So she,
Marxist or anything else.
She, born in 1897, she lived through...
Three years older than the century.
Yeah. Wow.
Add on three.
World War One, World War Two, the Great Depression.
All the way up to modern times.
Vietnam, the Civil Rights Movement.
Huge in Vietnam, right.
Yeah.
I saw in 71, and she died in 70, what was it? She died in...
1980,
right, and she was 83 years old. Yeah. Right. In the end, she had a bad heart condition. Mm-hmm. And she was very, very weak. And, for example, she couldn't even go to Mass, even though it was downstairs in Mary House, there was Mass every day. She wasn't able to go, so they'd bring her up communion. But she would spend a half an hour in preparation to receive communion,
wow,
and a half an hour in thanksgiving after. Just receiving communion was a whole hour of prayer right there.
What an example for all of us.
Oh, remain tremendously. I mean, I have to say personally that she's been a tremendous example for me, even though she brought me out.
So, and you don't hold a grudge, though. That's
I don't hold a grudge.
That's marvelous.
I better not if I want to get something.
So, the cause for sainthood.
It's good for proceeding in New York, the Archdiocese, and Cardinal, what's his name?
Dolan
is pushing it pretty, mm-hmm. Yeah. Cardinal Cook went to her funeral, and he used to call her on her birthday, and he was there for part of the funeral. Her relationship with the official church is interesting. And she was very aware of the fact that the official church was just as middle-class, comfort-loving as everybody else. And she had some blistering comments about, pleasure-loving priests and sitting in their offices, in their nice, clean offices and nice, clean suits. At the same time, she was an extremely convinced Catholic. She said, I never regretted becoming a Catholic. What she was steeped in is the lives of the saints. The liturgy of the church, liturgy of the hours, daily Eucharist, weekly confession. And one of the most memorable passages in The Long Loneliness is in the first page, where she describes Saturday night confessions in a dimly lit church in Manhattan.
Mm.
And she said, you go in and there's the hum of the big fan. This is the middle of summer, middle of the fan. There's the smell of incense, and then there's the noise of that little shutter going back and forth.
Right.
That's between you and the priest. And then you go in, she says, when your turn comes up, you go in, and she says, all you do is you spill out your unvarnished sins, not your virtues, not anybody else's sins, your own sins, your great, drab, monotonous sins. That's on the first two pages of the book.
Wow. You wonder if the... much of her confession was about pride.
Yeah, well, it was. See, she had this obsession. One of her first books, I think it was her first book, was a novel called The 11th Virgin. And The 11th Virgin is really about Dorothy herself. It's about her own sexual, or her own coming to life, exploring, discovering her sexuality. So it's quite racy, with a lot of erotic passages in there. And it was published, and then they bought up the movie rights, although they never made the movie, but they bought the movie rights. It was that money she used to buy her little house in Staten Island. Then when she became a Catholic and became famous in Catholic circles, she began to feel embarrassed about this novel, The 11th Virgin. She was embarrassed about anyone knowing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to admit that she wrote it. And she used to lie in bed at night wishing she could go around to all the libraries in the country and take every copy and burn them. This came up in confession. And the priest finally said to her, he said, look, he says, your problem is not pornography. Your problem is pride, he says, or vanity. You're worried about your reputation.
Wow.
So you're afraid of the truth. Well, she describes leaving that confession. She said, the words of the priest were haunting me. She said, I took an hour-long walk. She said, I couldn't get the words of the priest out of my head.
But,
scolding or not, she kept going. A weekly confession. She was devoted to confession every week. Amazing.
So Is her cause for sainthood? You mentioned Dorothy Day, and you're going to get a reaction, at least from people who know about her. Right. And some people would regard this as controversial. Is it still controversial?
I suppose if people really knew her, it is. But see, people, I think, don't know the radical side. Mm-hmm. People would see, let's say Sacramento. I mean, people in Sacramento would know about loaves and fishes.
Right.
And what they would think of is all those people who are being fed, and the tremendous work that's being done by other ones all around the country. What they don't stop to think about, because they haven't read about it yet, is the fact that she was on picket lines. She took the side of the communists in the Spanish Civil War, by the way, and lost all kinds of circulation. Her paper, The Catholic Worker, which she wrote every weekend, lost circulation because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So she was extremely controversial. Oh, yeah. She had a big fight with Cardinal Spellman.
Mm.
Spellman had a problem in the diocese one year. The cemetery workers went on strike, the Catholic cemeteries of the Archdiocese mm-hmm. of New York, which would be a big outfit with a lot of people. They went on strike. And he broke the strike by bringing in the seminarians over the summer to work, to take the graves. Well, Dorothy was furious, and Dorothy took after him in the paper, in her paper.
Right.
And so an official from the Chancellor's office called her up and said, that paper of yours, we're going to have to ask you to take away the name Catholic. It's not a Catholic newspaper. It mm-hmm. doesn't represent the official position of the Archdiocese of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So she very, very respectfully wrote back to the Cardinal and said, I beg your pardon, but there are several publications in this diocese that don't represent the official voice of the Archdiocese. For example, the Knights of Columbus have one, and all kinds of other people have papers. So Cardinal Spellman is reputed to have said, they didn't teach us in the seminary how to handle people like this. So he backed off and left her alone. He just backed off.
Wow. So how great a circulation did the Catholic Worker have?
Oh, gosh, in that time, see, it had a huge circulation, a couple of 100,000, I think, but it went
wow.
down to half then because of that. All kinds of nuns and Catholic students were buying bundles, and parishes were buying bundles, and the Civil War caused a huge rift. And then, of course, her voluntary poverty thing was also constantly being debated by the... She'd get these students coming in who were volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
The students would have their own minds, like the student in Sacramento Women's Center. They had their own minds about the whole thing, and it became a time that became very disruptive, and you know, she had lots of problems.
And the Catholic Worker movement
it still
exists, right?
Yeah, it's still around. And it's still a penny a copy.
Wow.
One penny a copy.
That is fabulous.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can get for a penny anymore. You can't even get penny candy for a penny.
I know. That's right.
There's a penny candy store up in, I think it's in Live Oak on Highway 99. And you go in there and it's nothing's a penny. Wow, that is so fascinating. So the cause for sainthood, and we are only verifying what God has already declared, right? We're not making somebody a saint.
No, this is the thing. However, of course, there would be, I thought there would be in the past at least an issue over the fact that she had an abortion.
Right.
You know, it's a very sensitive subject. But I mean, I would say, so people are shocked. I'd say, look, we need somebody who had an abortion to be a patron saint to those who are suffering that tragedy. I mean, all those women who do it because they're forced into it, they don't really choose it, then they live with the guilt afterwards. Wouldn't someone like Dorothy Day be much more consoling to them than Teresa of Avila or some nun?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's not a requirement of sainthood, except maybe for Mary, to be without sin.
No, exactly. And saints are human beings who are flawed, who are frail people like ourselves. She was huge, of course, in the saints herself. She wrote a book on Therese of Lisieux. She was big on Therese of Avila. All of them. She was huge in the saints. She loved to read them, and they were obviously a huge inspiration to her.
Did she ever meet Mother Teresa?
She did. Now, did you ask that? I came across that somewhere. Mother Teresa was in New York, and she went to see her.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I remember, she had all kinds of VIPs coming to see her, all kinds. I mean, at the end, there were people calling up. There were you know, the networks. Bill Moyers was calling up, and the networks were interviewing her. And she, at that stage, she was getting very frail. She had a heart condition, and she really found it very onerous. And, of course, her famous statement was, when they called her a saint, she'd say, "Don't dismiss me that easily. I'm a saint." That was her comment. Get rid of him.
That's great. So did she ever get in, not herself running for politics, but where people would seek her endorsement for mayor or for governor?
Oh, I would think not. I've seen nothing on that. I've read a lot of stuff on her. No, she's in a different category. But they admired her. It's like those sheriff's deputies. I mean, they just admired her. Even the prison guards coming to have their roofs with me is blessed by her. She was just, she was a very different social reformer, that's for sure. She wasn't a social reformer.
See, I found this quote, Pope Benedict XVI used her conversion story as an example of how to journey toward faith in a secularized environment. In an address before the U.S. Congress, I remember...
You mean Pope Francis?
No, Pope Francis. This first one is from Pope Benedict.
You're kidding.
He says, Pope Benedict XVI used her conversion story as an example of how to journey toward faith in a secularized environment. And then the next paragraph says, in an address before the U.S. Congress, Pope Francis included her in a list of four, I remember that, four exemplary Americans who built a better future. I'm trying to remember, I think Martin Luther King was one of them.
Correct, and Thomas Merton was one.
Thomas Merton was one of them, yes.
Yeah, and Lincoln.
And Lincoln. I remember being more struck with Merton, actually, than Dorothy Day, although I was very pleased about Dorothy Day as well.
Right,
and,
yes.
I remember that address well.
So that was a big boost for her to get that mentioned from Pope Francis.
Yeah,
that was to the joint session of Congress. That's when Boehner was Speaker.
That's right, and she went out on the balcony or something.
On the balcony, he was full of tears.
It was a big moment. Yeah.
Right.
So, can you recommend the book to learn about Dorothy Day for people?
Oh gosh, there's a total mountain of stuff out there, literally a mountain of stuff on her. The long loneliness is still very popular, and it's the one that most people, when they reread her, I think that from Union Square to Rome, the earlier one, which is shorter, is more interesting from the point of view of just about her conversion to Catholicism and why she believes what the Catholic Church believes, and the way that she defends the Catholic Church's beliefs to these communists. I mean, to see her descriptions of the Eucharist, and that she was non-compromising. Jesus is just as present on the altar as he was in Galilee to these communists who could not believe and could not understand what happened to her.
That's the one I think I want to read because
as
a cradle Catholic raised by a mom who was a convert, her story was a heck of a lot different. My mom's story was a heck of a lot different than mine.
Is that right? Interesting.
You know, and you feel you're almost I don't like the word jealousy, but you look at them with awe and go, how did mom chose this, you know? As an adult, I've chosen it, but I was baptized the day I was born.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I have it here. It's 170 pages in this book, so it's actually quite short. It's quite short, and I found it very interesting. Yeah.
When did she write that?
She would have written that back somewhere in her midlife.
Uh-huh.
She was just hearing all these objections from people who were communists and various shades of socialism. And just couldn't understand why she would get involved with the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I think we cradle Catholics have a lot to learn from converts.
Well, absolutely. I think so. Absolutely. They really take it seriously. For her, there was no middle ground. It was either all or nothing. That's fun. Her entire life is like that.
Yeah.
But she was a voracious reader, an absolutely voracious reader. See, back in those days, you didn't have social media, and you didn't have 24-hour cable news. There was nothing else to do, but she'd gobble up books. I mean, one of the books that she was really influenced by was this book by Ignazio Saloni, Bread and Wine. It's a novel about Italy during Mussolini's time, World War II, and about a priest but she was really, she was constantly putting that down and quoting it to people. But then she'd quote Dostoevsky, she'd quote Tolstoy, she'd quote Teresa of Avila. She was incredibly well-read, incredibly well-read. What it makes me realize is how little reading we do today compared with her day, because we have so much distractions from social media and cable TV.
Well, it's a truly fascinating story. I cannot wait for you to publish
next tour coming out.
The next two in the Catholic Herald, on the back page, and it's fascinating. Thanks so much for joining us today. I hope
thanks, Bob.
Hope we can get you back when number two comes out.
Thank you. Okay.
Hey, thanks, Father.
Thanks. God bless.
God bless you too. That's Monsignor bye-bye. James Murphy. Quote-unquote retired priest of the Diocese of Sacramento, from a native of Ireland, of course, as so many priests when I was growing up in the diocese were. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, this is Brian Visitation, Director of Media and Communications for the Diocese of Sacramento. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Jennifer Campbell joins us.
Hi.
The Director of Trinity Pines and all kinds of things.
Yes.
You're not even wearing a hat today, but
no,
you
I'm
do
not.
Wear a lot of hats.
I do. I wear a lot of them. Today has been one of those days where I got to wear a bunch of them all at the same time, so it's
and
been
fun. And
you're
about to jump in the car and head up I-5 to the great city of Anderson.
I am. You're right. Yeah. So we are heading into our third week of summer camp, or of our day camps. And this week three is Christmas in July week in Anderson.
It's going to be chillier in Christmas than it's going to be in Anderson.
Yes, we're going to really be pulling in that energy of the cold Christmas weather, because the forecast is, well, hotter than the sun for the week in Anderson. So we're...
Is Santa going to be wearing shorts?
Most definitely. Yeah. If Santa comes, he hasn't confirmed. He looked at the weather and was like, I don't know. Yeah. But if he comes, yes, he'll most likely be in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, I'm guessing, because it's hot. So,
well, if Santa's Catholic, he has to be confirmed.
There, ha. That was a good dad joke there. But yeah, so we've done our first 2 weeks and they've been really fun. I mean, that first week of July was
you were
we were at Holy Family in Citrus Heights, and it was we had a great week. A really fun bunch of kids that came out. They were silly and goofy. And we, you know, we loved them very much. And then we spent our next week at St. James, another group of fun, silly kids.
Did you go hike the Redwood Grove?
I didn't, but we actually changed our trip because we had our teen trip that week, and we actually were able to run it. We had to cancel it the first two because of the heat, but we were able to run this one last week at, and we did the Puta Creek Trail. And the kids had a great time. And if you check out our Instagram and Facebook, you can see a post that was posted on Thursday.
Good.
Showing the kids on the trail. They didn't hike the whole trail we had planned. You know, they went as far as they wanted to. Then they found picnic benches and sat down and played cards.
And they found some shade.
That's right, because that's what teenagers do. But they had a really good time hanging out with each other. And I heard even one of the kids accidentally fell in the creek. So.
Oh. Accidentally?
Yeah. I don't know how accidentally, but she was mostly dry, just her feet were wet.
Well, I have four teenagers, and the most common thing I hear now is, we're going to the creek with some friends.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Good to know. That's a good, so I guess I picked a good trail. So we've done the teen trips and the day camp. It's been really fun for the...
So what are you going to do in Anderson? You're going to hike Mount Shasta or
something? We're actually not going to do any of the trails in Anderson. We'll still have teen trips this week, but we're going to be in, one is in Roseville and one is in Folsom. Mm-hmm. So the staff that are running those, it's separate than the day camp staff.
Okay.
We were going to try
to take the staff with you.
Yes.
It's not a new staff.
Yeah. We take the staff with us. It's the same crew. I have three phenomenal staff. And we run the camp for the week and then move on to the next parish.
Are these
parish.
People who would have been at Camp Pendola probably?
Probably. Yeah. One for sure. The second one probably, and the last one maybe. So, yeah. I mean, I think it was, it worked out really well. They're getting, you know, a different kind of experience. The kids, you know, were just trying to give them a Camp Pendola mm-hmm. experience. So we are doing faith-based activities and our traditional camp activities and lots of lanyards. The other day, I looked over and the girl was doing a 6-string lanyard, which I can only do 2. I can't even start them for that, like, if they're that many. And some of the kids just get really into, like, making lanyards because it's really something that they can do tactile with their hands while we're talking or giving instructions or doing a hike or something. And she figured out how to do a 6-string one, and far better than me.
I've always wondered if people are knitting when they're talking to you, you're talking with them, if they were actually listening, you know?
I mean, as somebody who, when I was a young youth minister, took up knitting because I had a lot of time where I was hanging out with the kids and just their, you know, listening or whatever. And I would knit while they were talking and I was definitely listening to them. And then they just thought it was hilarious.
It's completely mindless.
It's it can be, you know, you just kind of get into the rhythm of doing that with your hands and it helps you. For me personally, it helps me concentrate. So anything like that where I'm doing like making friendship bracelets, things like that. Yeah.
Wow. You could make rosaries.
We do that, actually. There's a special knot we use, and we make knot rosaries at camp. And it's actually one of the activities that I'm the expert at camp, mm-hmm. which is not a lot of all of the activities. So that's the one where it's like, hey, Miss Jen, can you please come fix this child's whatever rosaries? And sometimes, you know, especially with the little ones, I'll turn them into rosary bracelets.
Cause I have a plastic, I was in my pocket, a plastic rosary, but it's fallen apart.
Let me see. It is.
Fallen apart. It's got the pretty purple beads on the, you know.
Well, I'll have to make you a knot rosary and bring and get someone to bless it.
A rosary. But they gave it to me one day as 40 Days for Life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think they gave it to one of my kids. We were all out there together.
Right. And they handed it to you because you were the Sherpa of the day that day. Yeah. The rosaries are, again, it's one of those things that the kids like to make them. They get excited about it. Kids that don't necessarily have a strong devotion to the rosary, it's something they take home and can then explain to their parents. So it's got a little bit of faith formation in it. And we'll do them with older teens, especially. It's something that they can do, and they'll try to, you know, outdo each other's, and they want mm-hmm. them to be perfect, and which I'm always like, nothing's perfect. It's all good. But it's something I like to do at different talks. And when we've taught them to kids, like the first time I met Vince Nims from the Newman Center
in Davis,
he was doing a workshop for us for our virtual World Youth Day, which was not like virtual would be now, but it was in person at Trinity Pines, just not at the, not in whatever country.
It wasn't because of COVID. It was just,
it's just because we couldn't fly everyone to World Youth Day. And while he was giving his talk, I like tied up with the World Youth Day colors. They sell like rosary string with the colors. And I made him a rosary that day. And he was like, did you just do this while I was talking? Like, yeah, helps me focus on what you're saying.
So you just go to the bead shop, or do you order special beads?
You order, it's string. It's not beads. It's all made, the knot.
Rosary. Mm-hmm,
it's all made with string.
Wow.
And it's actually, we use any kind of string, but the cheapest way to get it is, fishing net, like the string used to make fish nets.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is even kind of funnier if you think about that, because Jesus was a fisherman.
That's right. Who walked on water.
That's right.
So if you pray this rosary, you could probably
maybe
walk on water.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not making that claim, but
it wasn't very deep.
Exactly. So, yeah, so we're doing all kinds of crafts and games with the kids and getting them outside and trying to be inside when it's hot, and just like we would at camp, and doing it out in the wild of parishes. So we're in Anderson this week, and then next week will be our final week. We'll be at Holy Trinity in El Dorado Hills. So.
Which is actually closer to the sun than the rest of us.
Yes, hill. It is. Yeah. It is a little bit closer. But somehow there's always a nice breeze there. So I think we'll be good.
It catches the breeze.
It does. It really, it's lovely.
Yeah.
So we're excited to be able to do those. And then, you know, we were planning to do a family camp weeks, but we had to cancel those. But we are going to offer.
Not because of lack of interest, but you just couldn't get the staff.
You're
having the same problem that we're hearing out there in quote unquote the real world,
right?
Especially fast food places, restaurants.
Yeah,
and we're only open 3 days a week now because we don't have the staff.
And that was the issue. We just didn't have the staff, so we decided to cancel that and put all of our focus on our trips and our day camp. But we've decided that we will run family camp, which is traditionally when it was, which is over anyways. So it's going to be over Labor Day weekend. We will be able to do most of the activities that we would normally do at family camp. There'll be some socially distancing, of course, and trying to keep families in pods.
It'll
be at Camp Pendola in Camptonville. Yes, so it'll be up there, up in the pines. And all of the staff who are running our day camps are going to be up there, and a few of the few staff that we've had from previous summers, they'll be coming back to join us for that, to help work that weekend to make it fun. We can do our campfire and all those traditional camp experiences that we like.
Well, I'm looking at September, so the first weekend of September will be family camp.
Yeah.
Then the next Sunday is the Bishop Gagos dinner.
Yep.
Then the next Saturday is On Fire.
Yes, sir.
And then the next Friday and Saturday is ministry days.
Yes, sir.
Wow. And you're in charge of all of that, right?
Well, not that thing in the second weekend. Yes, so family camp will be there present for. I will be running On Fire that third weekend. And then the last weekend of the month, I will be running ministry days. So you may not see me if you
have a different hat for each one.
I just wear my On Fire hat usually for all of them because I like it the best.
Is it a big, like, keep the centers, or a ball cap?
It's a ball cap.
Okay.
It's a trucker hat, and it's neon pink.
And actually, if you go backward a little bit,
the
22nd of August, we're going to have the ballpark game with Bishop Soto.
Yes, we will have
on Father's Day.
Usually on Father's Day, but we moved it to August, so we will have the River Cats game on the 22nd with Bishop Soto will be there to throw the first pitch.
Yeah.
And that's always a good time. So if you're even thinking about it,
I remember one year
recommend going.
He was kind of out in a parking lot with somebody warming up.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
And you know, I as far as I know, Bishop Soto does really follow the River Cats. So, like, he's into the game. He likes baseball.
He knows baseball.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
he grew up in Orange County. You know, I mean.
He had the Angels.
You got the Angels, and of course the Dodgers.
That's true. And we're in Northern California. Be careful saying Dodgers.
You're not that far from the Padres.
That's true. You got to be careful though. We are in Northern California. Let's keep it to just saying Giants or A's. Otherwise, we get into trouble.
I get the A's and the Angels mixed up.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, because A's, Angels.
Yeah.
I wonder if they call the Angels the A's down there. That little halo around the
A. They do. I've never been to an Angels game or really very many baseball games. I just know that the Angels play there because it's in Anaheim, which is where Disneyland is.
Yeah. Even though, I mean, I think initially in the Pacific Coast League, it was the Los Angeles Angels.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Oh.
Because City of Angels.
City of Angels. That would make sense. Yeah, no. And I think they're I don't know what city they're. I know they're in Anaheim,
they're in Anaheim now.
But I don't know what they're called.
At one point they were the California Angels when they first started. I believe they're now just the Anaheim Angels.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that would be cool. So that game is the 22nd. So it's going to be a busy little bit of time
That's
there.
It's going to be a real stretch. That's right around the corner too.
It is. It's right around the corner. Ministry Day's website is getting up. We're adding our speakers, as we get them approved. On Fire tickets are on sale right now.
Okay.
So if you go to onfirenorcal.com, and then there is a button on the homepage that takes you to like the price breakdown and then how do you purchase the tickets. It's a link to back to the Six Flags website, which you will you have to put in a promo code, which is I believe just On Fire. It's written on the website, and you can get your tickets now. You can buy and make sure if you buy your ticket, you also buy a parking ticket, because if you buy the parking ticket ahead of time, it's $10. If you buy it at the door, I think it's like $25. So little things that you got to think
and
about.
You take your own transportation.
Your own transportation. You can go as a group. If you do have like a group of friends that you're going to go with to On Fire, buy your tickets all together, so you only pay one processing fee.
And if you don't want to drive down there today, if you want to get down there today, there are a lot of motels around
there. There are a lot of motels around there. Because we do start early. We start at 9 o'clock and we go till 8. We'll go to 8:30 this year. We've got great speakers lined up. I know you've already had Sister Josephine on and Father Radmar.
Radmar, yeah.
And then
fascinating.
He's great. Oh, you've had him. I didn't know you had him on, but he's great. Sorry.
Very good. Well, Jennifer, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Back to work.
Yes.
Have fun in Anderson.
Thank you. I will.
One of my favorite towns in Northern California.
Yeah, great.
Very good. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
From the love of my own comfort. the fear of me.